Hello and welcome back to True Crime Guys Podcast. I'm your host, Michael, and Andy's back with me again today.
I feel like I've been here all day.
It has been a long
time. Well, the sun's not here anymore. You don't let the windows in, Michael. You close the windows. I can't even tell anymore.
We close everything in the studio.
It's like a goddamn casino. I just keep losing money.
Listen, I figured out I have to block off everything in the studio. I don't even want to look outside because, you know, I spend all day in here. The whole day gets burnt out. I don't even want to see time and sunshine passing me by. I don't want to know. I just want to come out and be like, huh, it's still daylight. Great.
I don't want to how much the world has passed me by. Well, I've worked my fingers to the bone and my eyes to the core. Just come out all squinty. It's like, the birds.
Exactly. But I must be honest, editing last week's episode was actually pretty fun because I thoroughly enjoyed last week's episode. I mean, I'm obviously biased, but I think it's one of our best episodes ever of True Crime Guys. If you guys have not listened to the Murderous Mannings episode, Andy and I had a blast recording that episode. Did we not? It felt like 5 minutes and it was like an hour and we're like, holy shit, that was a fun episode.
It was because it was literally every step of their plan, which is like, really? Oh, yep. Okay, let's. Really? You step over the shit.
That's true. And we could let the jokes fly because it's an older case, you know, 1800s. I think everyone is healed by now.
And fucking Pierce.
Yeah, fucking Pierce.
Pierce.
If he shows up again, I swear to God.
I actually had to go back, just one more side judge. I actually had to go back and show Megan that documentary clip because we were like, we're not exaggerating. Like, even in the clip, Pierce is standing there like Zoidberg in the background, just like, yay, I got invited.
Exactly. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, please go check out last week's episode, The Murderous Mannings. You will not regret it. Also, last week on Sandu, we covered Natalie. Oh my God.
Totally Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood. Actress Natalie Wood.
How? I didn't think you would forget.
Dude,
that.
I got a lot of names up here, man. And you know I would. But we covered that on Sandu last week, and this week we had a little Sandu mishap, Andy, didn't we?
Listen, we called
it
a mishap.
Andy did all his research, except for the most important fucking research was, have we covered it already, Andy?
Ask Michael if we've done this before.
Please, just ask me. My memory's not great, but I'll remember if we did the damn case.
I felt so proud of myself. I was like, I'm going to surprise Michael with this banger of a case. It's going to be fire. He's going to love this.
You're right. It is a great case.
I like went back on the catalog. I was like, nope, doesn't look like he's covered this at all. Type in the name, type in the place, type in the nope. Sounds good.
Yep.
I bet he's going to fucking love this. And then like 3 hours, 4 hours later, he's like, bad news. Like, you love it too much? You want to make a series out of it?
Not even close, bro. I'm like, yes, it is a great case. Amazing case even. So amazing. I can't believe we haven't done it. Wait, we already have.
Yeah. So that's on me.
Episode number 70.
I did not double check with my predecessor there.
Right.
Make sure it wasn't in the back catalog.
So if you're missing a Sandu episode this week, just go back and listen to number 70. That's what we were going to do.
Yeah.
It's called Gone in a Crash. It's about a young boy who disappeared in a head-on semi-collision. It is a very weird story.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, it was mind-blowing. I felt so proud of it. I was like, oh, Michael's going to be so thankful for this. He's going to think it's got a great case, man, great clips, great sound bites. Oh, we already got those? Okay, cool. Yeah I'll find something else.
Maybe we'll record one just for YouTube, right?
Yeah, just for video.
Maybe just for video. We can throw it on YouTube, get some shorts out of it or something like that. Speaking of, make sure you guys find us on YouTube, True Crime Guys. Make sure it's the official True Crime Guys channel. And please smash that subscribe button, as everyone likes to say. Speaking of YouTube, I used a YouTube video as my main source this week. And I am not ashamed to say it because it is, without a doubt, the best source out there on the internets for this case.
All of them.
All of the internets.
Yes.
I don't care what internets you're on.
Light, dark, medium.
This video from Explore With Us is the best video on Brian Cohey.
I will agree.
I'm nobody, but that's what I think.
The only thing I had, I was like, I asked you the whole time. I was like, I just cannot tell if this is a real narrator or an AI voice. It sounds so much like one of those old trailer voice guys.
Yeah.
Like one of those, like, this spring coming.
It does, and I think that's what he's trying to do. I think it's a professional voice actor.
I think it is. I'm like, it sounds so good.
I mean, this channel is absolutely killing it, bro.
I'm like, it's so good that I had to actually question, like, is this a robot doing it? It's so good of a voice. I'm like, yeah, I think it's a guy, though, but still, it's so good.
It is a good voice, and also, double-edged sword, it's also the thing I hate about the videos. Sometimes I just wish they would just play the interview.
Yeah.
It's like they interject to say very obvious things to me, okay? Like, I'm not saying this is obvious to everyone. As a person who studies true crime and is an enthusiast or whatever you want to call me, it seems a bit much. But that's okay.
Yeah.
Because you would rather them be more thorough, especially in this case, you know, especially in my case, where you're going to do a podcast about it.
Yeah.
And I feel like they broke down the case in the best way. The freaking documentary, I'm going to call it a documentary. It's basically a documentary.
It basically is.
It's an hour and 42 minutes. But this Explore With Us video, I mean, this Explore With Us channel, they're just changing the game as far as like true crime on YouTube. And all they're doing really is, well, for one, they're probably greasing palms of like police stations all over the freaking country and evidence rooms or whatnot to get the videos, even though it's like, you know, freedom, what is it? Right to Know Act.
Freedom of Information.
Freedom of Information Act. That's basically what they're doing. And they're just getting these body cam footage, dash cam footage videos and all this stuff. And they put it all together. And then and a lot of their videos have interrogations, and they'll show almost the entire interrogation.
Yeah. It's not like they've gotten like illegal footage. It's just like this was never shown to the public.
It's just they applied for everything you can get.
Yeah. And this was not like sealed footage.
It's the speed at which they get this stuff out that blows me away. It's like, holy shit, y'all got stuff freaking A&E doesn't even have. Like, damn, Oxygen ain't got this
shit.
The
local news didn't have this. They could have gone down they could have walked to the police station and directly asked for this footage. Yeah. And like, the local news just didn't have this. Like, you guys really put in the work to get the information that you could have.
That channel's like a legit company now.
That's what I'm saying. You guys really, they put in the work. We're hyping this company up a lot.
Too freaking much.
We're not getting paid for that.
Yeah. Anyways, Explore With Us. Check out the video. The title is Parents Find Head and Hands in Son's Room, something like that. You can't miss it. It's got like over a freaking million views in less than a week.
Yeah, it's very on the nose title.
Yeah. But if you guys have no idea what we're talking about, in February of 2021, teenager Brian Cohey he was 19 years old, attacked, murdered, and dismembered 69-year-old Warren Barnes, who was a homeless man who was sleeping under a bridge in Grand Junction, Colorado. And boy, is it a crazy story. Because we know exactly what happened. This is one of those rare ones, Andy, right?
Yeah, where there's not a single detail missing.
No, there's
not a single one. Nothing is left up to the imagination.
I'm so glad you have a great memory, Andy. It's really going to come in handy in retelling these events.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for making me watch a documentary.
I mean, it might not come in handy so much when you're trying to sleep tonight, but in these events.
And my girlfriend's out of town this week, so I'm just going to go home and just dwell on this.
Just going to be alone, just lying in bed.
just like an old detective. I'm just going to start smoking cigarettes again, drinking scotch. Talking to the dogs.
You'll make it through, Andy.
Indy's gonna be sitting there like, I thought we were done with this, man. I thought we were past this. I thought you were happy now.
All right, Andy. Well, let's get this over with, man. Let's roll the intro.
Oh, thank God.
And how did you get here?
I murdered someone.
Okay.
Because, I mean, Murray going to jail for the 15 years, probably.
I have no idea.
Because
we're at the beginning.
It's murder. I mean, I'm going to jail for 20, probably. I stripped his clothes. I cut open his belly to see his guts. They're really pink. Sorry, that was morbid. Then I cut off his head. I gave him a Glasgow smile.
What's that?
A Joker smile. I have high-functioning Asperger's.
Okay.
I have ADHD.
Uh-huh.
And major depressive disorder. I took the knife, I pulled back the canvas, and I stabbed his neck. He was saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why? Ah! And I just kept on stabbing his neck. And during the time, I was growling and making animalistic noises. I suppose it was a frenzy.
Okay.
I was so excited, so rushed up on adrenaline and energy, which is woo-hoo! And I paused and he's like, why are you doing this? And I said, I've been wanting to do this for a long fucking time.
All right. So I want to start this story out very similar to the way that Explore With Us did, because I think it was just brilliant. We're going to start on February 28th, 2021. Brian Cohey Jr. got himself into a little bit of a pickle at the Blue Heron Boat Ramp This Blue Heron boat ramp, also called Blue Heron Point, I believe is what Brian refers to it as in the interview, but it's off the Colorado River. He had gotten his car stuck in the mud on the bank, and apparently while he was trying to get out, his entire car ended up in the river with him inside it, Andy.
Real Michael Scott move here. Turn left now.
Turn right now. Exactly. So he swims to shore. Luckily, he had his windows down, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, the whole car isn't submerged.
No, you see
it,
the
never
car.
It gets down past the windows.
Yeah, the windows are above the water, so he's able to get out and kind of like, you know, wade through the water, but it's up to his chest almost.
So he's like freaking out. He calls 911 because he's concerned. This is February. He's mm-hmm. concerned that he's going to get hypothermia, and he also calls his parents. And when they ask him, "Well, what the hell are you doing out there?" right? He's like, "Well, I was just parked there to relax and think." He just said that he got overwhelmed, which he sometimes did, and he would go for a drive and just find a quiet spot and sit and think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which fine. He was known to do, or he was known to just go out and drive and like leave for a few hours saying you need to like cool off
exactly.
or blow off some steam. So this was normal for him.
Exactly. So when police arrived, Brian's parents were already on the scene. And Brian tells them the same story while he's warming up in his parents' car. He's like apparently in their pantsless.
Yeah, they figured that out.
The police officer's like, "Well, let's hear it from him, you know. Could you step out of the car?" And his dad's like, "Oh, well, he doesn't have any pants."
Yeah, he's, "Any pants on?"
He's like, "Oh, okay, well."
No, Just stay in there.
Just
stay in that car. You stay in there.
That's one of the things that's so annoying about this case. Me and Andy talked about it before the show, is how these officers are so cordial and friendly. And I know they're trained to. It's just frustrating. It's like, he doesn't deserve
yeah.
that type of courtesy.
At this point, it's true.
I am speaking in hindsight, aren't I?
Yes. We do get to the point where the cops continuously treat him so cordially.
Yeah.
But at this point, yeah, they're everyone's kind of laughing at him because they just see the car floating there. And they're thinking like, "Are you Michael Scott? Like, this doesn't happen to people. How did you you were parked here and you tried to move and you slid in? Like, how dumb are you?" And they're like,
"Yeah, exactly.
19-year-old can't drive stupid." And like, his parents are backing him up. The cops are laughing at him. So yeah, at this point, it does. It seems like an office blooper or something. They're like, "Wow, we've never seen this before. This is me neither. Never me. No.
Yeah, just a bunch of small town cops with their minds blown.
Even all the tow truck drivers are like, "It's 3 a.m. Like, I'm not trying to, no."
And they're like, "It's where? I'm not getting in that damn river. It's February."
Yeah, no.
So Brian's parents take him home to change clothes and leave him there. And then they head back to the dock to kind of sort out all this because they actually did find a tow truck driver willing to do that. I can't imagine what that price was.
Oh, my God.
He could have made anything. He could have made any price. And that's what I would be thinking. I'd be like, I don't know, like $1,000?
Yeah.
I don't know. $2,000?
Where'd you get this number from? Website's it's really outdated. So our new rates are... I'll tell you when I get there.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll see how long it takes.
Exactly. So Brian's parents, they go back to the boat ramp, and everything, you know, just looks like one big stupid fuck up. Until one of the cops notices some substances on the bumper of Brian's car, which looks like blood, Andy. I'm going to go ahead and say
it looks red liquid.
It's some red liquid
kind
substance.
Kind of dripping down the bumper.
Yeah. Yeah, in a bloody fashion.
Like a blood drip?
Yeah, kind of stain the bumper, if you will.
Yeah.
Now, when he confronts the parents, they're actually, the police officer who spots it, when he confronts the parents, they're actually on the phone with Brian at the time. And they're relaying to the officers all the questions that he's asking them to Brian. And he's just denying everything. He's just playing stupid. He's like, "What? Blood?"
Well, did your son injure himself getting out of the car? Maybe he cut himself and he didn't notice. Like,
check,
make sure he's not hurt. And yeah, Brian's like, "Hurt? No, what? I'm fine. What are you talking about? Why would I be hurt?" It was like, "Blood on the bumper." Blood?
What? This just doesn't make any sense.
What? Why would?
How could?
Nah.
Yeah. So it's dark out. It's cold. It's Colorado, whatever. So police decided that we'll just pick this up in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. Let's investigate a little bit more when we can see. So for now, let's back up 24 hours, okay? We're throwing them a whole 24 hours later.
Yeah.
I mean earlier. I'm sorry. 24 hours earlier. On the night of February 27th, 2021, Warren Barnes, a homeless man living outside of downtown Grand Junction, Colorado, was sleeping under a bridge. Now, despite being homeless, Barnes was actually pretty popular among the downtown community for his charm and his love of reading, and really his consistency. I mean, the man was a creature of habit.
Yeah, he worked like clockwork.
Yeah, this did not work for Brian Cohey. But meanwhile, speak of the devil, Brian Cohey was 19 years old, and he had been plotting to murder someone for about the past 6 months.
Depending on when you ask him in the interrogation.
Exactly. You know, obviously that there were different times, but he was looking for a homeless person, he said, or a prostitute, obviously believing that there would be few people who would miss them. And Brian was prowling the back roads when he spotted 69-year-old Warren Barnes sleeping under that bridge. He approached Barnes with a kitchen knife, a mask, and three layers of gloves. And the mask is Michael Myers' mask.
Yeah.
And he's wearing the jumpsuit as well, the blue jumpsuit. So full on Michael Myers costume.
Imagine with a big butcher knife.
With like a butcher knife.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he's wearing three layers of gloves because, I mean, if you ask him, he did his homework, Andy.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, you know, those rubber gloves could betray you. They could rip during struggles. You know what I'm saying?
Fibers from your clothes.
And then somebody might get a partial print.
Yeah.
You know? So, three layers. Now, Cohey had seen Barnes laying under a canvas tent, and I think he actually drove by him at first and turned around. But when he came back, he basically walked up to Barnes' tent, knocked it off of him completely, and started stabbing him in the neck. Now, Barnes didn't die after the first stab and would actually wake up and start screaming in pain, asking, you know, pleading, what are you doing? What's going on? Why are you doing this?
Yeah, why? Why?
And Brian then got on top of Barnes and just continuously stabbed him, almost cutting his head off. And I think at one point during this moment, he actually responds. And he said, Brian, when he asked him why, he says, because I've been wanting to fucking do this for a long time or something like that. He does respond to him and he even tells him in the interrogation.
Yeah, because that's why I made the joke about depending on when you ask him in the interrogation. Because like at the first part of the interrogation, when he's kind of first explaining it, he says I just made a bunch of animal sounds. I was just growling and har, and I was just, I just said stinky, stinky, die, stinky. But then later on, he stops. He's like, well, after the first few stabs, I stopped and he asked me why. And I told him because I've been wanting to do this for a long fucking time.
Yeah.
And then he proceeds to keep stabbing him. So it's like,
right.
he does change it up to where it's like, oh, I was just in this pure animalistic state of, I didn't really know what was happening. And then as the more comfortable he gets in this retelling, he's like, he did ask me why. And I told him why.
Yeah. So after he's stabbing him and nearly decapitating him, he wasn't done still. And obviously at this point, Barnes is long gone. He did say as well that he heard his final breath and he knew when Barnes had passed. But he would even further mutilate the body, slicing open Barnes' stomach to, quote, see his guts. Just wanted to see his guts.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I can gather. This is a hard episode to talk. We are far beyond a warning, apparently, but a warning. It doesn't get any better from here.
No, the way he just gives us information, he's like, yeah, I always wanted to know what it was like to cut someone open and like to like almost like to just reach inside him.
Exactly. But he also admitted to police interrogation that he cut off Barnes' hands and placed them in a plastic bag and stabbed Barnes' eyes. He then cut apart Barnes' right arm at the joints and partially dismembered the left arm, and then cut a Joker-like smile in Barnes' face before finally decapitating him completely and placing the head in a box, leaving the rest of Barnes' body at the scene. Now, so he goes home. He washes immediately throws his jumpsuit in the wash. He stored the dismembered head and hands in trash bags, double bagged, in his closet. And then he would go to bed, right? Just lay down and go to sleep, Andy, right?
Yeah.
How hard could it be?
Well, let's not forget he also worked up a bit of a sweat there because he also kind of left out that he did cut off the arms, but then he proceeded to just kind of throw them somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I forgot that.
Because he talks about how he's like, it was surprisingly easy to kill him. I didn't even work up a sweat. But you know, then after cutting up the body and throwing the arms, I was kind of winded.
Yeah, the officer stopped and they're like, what do you mean you threw the arms? And he's like, yeah, he just kind of threw them around the same area.
Yeah, he's like, after I cut it, and I just threw that one over there, and then threw that one over there.
Yeah,
and like,
it was such weird.
Why? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah. So he's laying in his bed now, and he's thinking about everything, and suddenly he becomes worried because there was a potential hole in his gloves. He may have been betrayed, Andy.
Oh, no. All three of them?
All three of them. So Kohee put on a different outfit and drove back to the site of the murder, where he would place the body in his trunk, or at least the main part of it.
Yeah, the torso and the legs.
Then he drove to the Blue Heron River. And this is where he dumps Barnes' body into the water right before his car apparently goes in.
Yeah.
Dude, I think he's trying to ditch the whole car.
I don't know if he's trying to ditch the car, but I don't think it's the worst possibility if it happens.
Bro,
the car
do you know how much blood was in that car?
There had to have been a shit ton of blood. Yes.
There was blood running out the rear bumper.
Yes.
You know how much blood was all over that thing. There's no way you clean it. And he studies this shit all the time. He was trying to completely get rid of the car.
Or at least he was trying to at least back the trunk into the water so that like the trunk got submerged. Maybe he thought it would like wash it out or something. And then he got too deep and it just wouldn't come back out. So this was a complete fuck up. Luckily he actually was able to get the body out of the trunk and gone before the car lost control. So, like, that's why he makes this whole, like, joke later on.
Yeah, the body wasn't in the trunk anymore. So, he wasn't that worried about calling for help.
So, it's like he wasn't trying to, like, put the body out there in the car and submerge it. So, he's like, he got the body out. And then I think he was trying to rinse the trunk out.
Yeah, possibly. Just when you look at it, it's just like, there's no way that car ends up that far in the fucking water, like, without you getting all four wheels wet.
It's like, it's always like a Ford Focus or something like that. It's not like
I think it was like a Ford 500. Remember those sedans?
This is not an off-road vehicle. This is not some big SUV. This is not anything with, four-wheel drive. This is a small first-time driver car that his parents had gotten.
Right. Okay. So we're back up to the time where he'd gotten stuck in the river and you guys know what happened with the police showing up, blah, blah, blah. He took him home, get some pants, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So fast forward. Brian's parents are beginning to get very suspicious about this whole car in the river incident, and the car is at their house.
Yeah, they get it towed home.
Yes, the car goes home, and his dad is at home cleaning it out, okay? And he finds a wallet in the car, and it belongs, obviously, to Warren Barnes. So he calls some numbers that are in the wallet, and he eventually finds people who know him, and he's like, hey, I found this wallet, and they're like, where'd you find it? And he tells them.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. So now that whole search is in full effect because once they find out that his wallet was found down at the dock, they're like immediately suspicious. They're like, first off, he would never go down there. He has no reason to go down there. He wouldn't go down there.
He wouldn't walk that far.
I mean, this is a guy who does the exact same thing every day.
He's 69 years old. He is a homeless man who he's sleeping under a bridge in the same area that he frequents all the time. The people who report him missing are the people who, like this one lady gives him a chair to sit outside of her boutique every day.
Right.
The gas station attendant he goes to every day at 6 a.m. for free coffee. Those are the people who report him missing. It's not like, his employer or something like that. But yeah, this guy, there's no reason for that. And not only did he find the wallet, remember, he also found the fucking knife.
The knife, yeah. And he calls Brian about these things. And of course, the knife, he explains as protection. He said he found the wallet just down at the river that night or whatever.
Oh, he said he found it prior. Remember, he said, I found it like the day before or like, I found it earlier that night. And I just didn't even think about it. I just threw it in my glove box and just kind of forgot about it.
Right.
I was so preoccupied with the crash and stuff.
Yeah. But either way, it made his dad super suspicious. And on March 1st, 2021, this is 2 days now after Brian killed Barnes, his mother, Terry, decided to go and investigate in Brian's room. And just, she knew he was away. He was out visiting friends or whatever. And she just was like, I'm just going to go see what's going on, see what I can find, see if anything, can explain what the hell happened last night. But his mother, Terry, was investigating in his room and ended up calling 911 after discovering the head and hands of Barnes in her son's closet.
Apparently, she said she picked it up, She saw what she said would like looked like an ear.
The way, no, first she said, I felt it. She's like, I was feeling it in my hands. And like just rubbing my hands, she's like, you know, through the bag. She's like, and I, for the life of me, could not pick an object. She's like, what could this possibly be?
Yeah.
And then she looks in and, like Andy said, sees the ear.
But she just puts it right back into the sink and covers it with a towel. Like, it's just, she's like, nope.
Nope. Now, during her conversation with the dispatcher, his mom said that, this is a quote about Brian. She says, he has had a little bit of a fascination with the morbid. We thought he was channeling it into becoming a crime scene investigator, but apparently not so much.
Yeah, guess not, maybe. Guess he's going the real Dexter route.
That's what I'm saying. Like, with all this stuff and then the blood on the car, I think the parents feared the worst, man. That's why they kept investigating.
The reaction that his parents have at the time is so much of a, it's like a revelation. It's not so much of like a reaction. It's like everything we were trying not to believe was true. Like,
absolutely.
It's just this revelation of like, holy shit, we were wrong.
It's like, yeah. It's like our inclinations came true, more like. But so this is how the whole scene went down, right? So she calls Brian and tells him that he needs to come home. So Brian's on his way home. Then she calls her husband, tells him he needs to come home right now. And when Brian comes home, to keep him in the driveway, distract him with whatever the hell you got to, but keep him in the driveway. Meanwhile, she's inside and calling 911.
Don't forget who else she had at the house first. Remember, Terry ran a daycare for children
out of
her house.
Out of her house. That's ruined.
There were children and toddlers in that house when she found the head and hands.
Yes.
And she had to first call all of the parents and tell them it was like they had to come get their children. Then she was able to call the police and like call Brian and call.
Yeah, so she had to do all this while knowing that she found a head in her son's room.
And trying to maintain that some level of sanity for these, the small children she's in charge of at this time. And getting the parents to come and be like, take your children. I'm sorry. I bet those parents, when they picked up those kids, looked at her like they were literally looking at a ghost.
Absolutely. Because things are falling apart outside. No, when the cops show up, Brian is standing in the driveway, right? Talking to his father. And the cop basically approaches him. He's like, hey, how's it going? You know, beautiful day, whatever. He's trying to make small talk. And then he's like, your parents say they found something in your room. And he just looks right at him and he's like, do you have any idea what that might be? And he says, a human head and hands. Like, just like that.
Yeah, like, just yeah.
Human head,
human
and,
head
hands.
And hands.
Yeah, no big deal. And he's like, you know, from who? And he's like, that guy that went missing, when? And he's like, February 27th. And he's like, well, what happened to him? He said, I murdered him. And he said, how? He said, with a knife. I mean, just clear as day, man. He ain't even got no handcuffs on, and he's already telling the whole story. Like, he was so eager. That's the only thing I hate about doing cases like this. But it was just so fascinating. It caught my attention, and I ended up looking into it more than the case I was originally going to do. So I'm like, damn it, I need to do this case.
Yeah, it's... the fact that that cop is not there, there's no guns drawn, there's a cop, two cop cars show up.
Yeah.
And, he immediately just gives everything. They don't read him his rights at first. They don't say you're under arrest. They don't say we're here about this. They just ask him two questions and he just starts.
I mean, he's pretty calm about it, really. He's like, holy shit, this is actually working out like the textbook said it would.
He's like, this can't be real. It's like, I have to take this with a grain of salt. Is this kid unstable?
It was like a training video straight out the SOPs.
Yeah, it was like the best case scenario.
Yeah, this was the best case scenario.
But yeah, that cop is just so casual. Walk up hey, you know why we're here,
for real. So they arrest him, they take him in, and there's a few little comments he makes in the car. He talks about how when they pass underneath the bridge where he killed him, he's like, yep, it was under this bridge that I did it. And then the officer that's driving the car, she just completely ignores him, just doesn't give him any attention at all. He's just fishing for this attention that he knows he's about to get.
Ask me some more questions.
And when he gets in the interrogation room, Guys, like I said, it's well worth the watch. Explore with us. You get to see the majority of the interrogation. Actually, I think there is another video if you guys just want to see the straight up interrogation, like unedited. I believe that's on YouTube as well.
Yeah, probably.
You just don't get quite as much of the background.
And you don't get all the body cam footage of on the scenes. Exactly. Because that was like the cop walks in the house after answering all his questions. He's like, okay, let's go look and see what your mom found. Like the body cam from his chest walks into the kitchen, walks up to the sink, lifts the towel, it's very much, I'm not trying to be comical about it, but he just like opens the bag briefly and it kind of blurs out and he's just like, yep, that's a head, and just puts everything, like just puts it, close the bag, just, puts the towel back down, and turns right back out and walks out of the house.
He takes
just
his gloves right back off.
He's just like, yep, that's a head. All right. Just starts walking right back out. He's like, all right, take it back, put him in the car. It's so matter of fact. I don't want to look at this.
And this is the part where it's like I was referring to earlier, where it's kind of frustrating with how cordial they are with him being such a horrific person. But I understand it's their job, and their job is to arrest him. And if they do that easily, by all means, right? Nobody gets hurt. He doesn't attack any officers, whatever. All's well that ends well. But it's just frustrating how they're like, oh, could you come with me and get in the back of the car?
It's like
ass in the car.
Put some handcuffs on him.
Put some fucking handcuffs.
At this point, it's like you don't really know how dangerous he is. Huh? Just walking free-handed, all Neanderthal-like, and just like gets in the back of the car, and they're so friendly to him. Like, you just found the severed head and hands of a murder victim in this guy's fucking sink. You are being so friendly with this 19-year-old kid who frankly looks like a middle-aged woman. I cannot get over how much this 19-year-old kid looks like a 38-year-old lesbian.
I wasn't going to say nothing, Andy, it is, but like, I'm I guess not it needs crude, to be said.
But like, there is a silver lining to this documentary and to all of it, is the fact that every goddamn time they choose to put a picture of Brian Kohe Jr. on the screen for anything, it is the worst fucking picture
it really is
ever got. It's a screen grab from the body cam footage of him looking out his parents' car window pantsless with the window half down, with his mouth half open, looking over his shoulder just like, huh? And that's the picture they use every time. Like, thank you.
That's what they should do.
You look like Peter Griffin almost. And
dude, there were so many signs. This is as good a time as any to talk about some of the signs, which, you know, all straight from his mouth. And then the confession of friends, family member, teachers. Oh, my God. Teachers. Every teacher he had thought he was a psychopath. I mean, there were so many. There was a time where he tortured a cat. He said when he was, I guess, a young teenager, he found a stray cat and decapitated it and kept the head for like 3 days or something like that. Mm-hmm. Afraid.
So it started to stink.
Yeah. And then there was another instance with another animal. I think it was like a beaver or something.
They said he found like it was like a possum or something. But yeah, he skinned it and tried to make like leather out of it. It was like fresh roadkill or something. He tried to make leather out of.
Yeah. So there were signs. And not to mention, it's like, I have friends with dark humor, okay? And I've been known to make a dark joke or two, but the shit that this kid would say.
Oh my God. Like the fact that they found, like, teachers found notebooks in his class of like serial killer statistics and their MOs and like how they were caught and like all
and
of
it
his
wasn't
just
in a study way. It was in like a collecting baseball cards way.
Yeah. Like this is all like chicken scratch with a Sharpie drawn each page, like is dedicated to a different serial killer. Like you're making like a fucking encyclopedia for yourself.
So creepy.
And they look at like every teacher like has to explain. They're like, yeah, all of us came together. We told his parents that this kid needed help, that the kids didn't feel safe with him here, that like we were afraid he was going to be violent or he may cause a scene. Like he got fucking, slapped a special needs student with a fucking mace that he made.
That's right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
It's made out of masking tape and foam or whatever, but it's still like you put enough masking tape around something and whip it with some speed.
Oh yeah.
It's going to leave a nice welt.
Yeah.
And apparently he whipped a special needs student at their school or something like that and got charged with assault.
That's insane, dude.
The fact that there were signs.
Yeah. There was another instance where, there was a student with PTSD and she had reactions and panic attacks to certain loud noises, and he came up behind her and just started clapping his hands real quick and laughing, and it apparently sent her into an actual seizure. And they called, and the police were called, and he was suspended again. But his mom just, dude, she just would not hear it. It was just, she felt like he was being targeted.
God, that was so, that was so frustrating to hear her. Like, her son brought nunchucks to school, and he got them from some other kid that he, like, paid off with candy.
Yeah.
And they were like, they got mad at him. Like, you can't bring weapons to school. And his mom was like, well, what about the other kid? He got them from him. They're like, that kid doesn't have significant behavioral issues that we've already had to deal with.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Your son, like, is a, like, is
your
a
son actually is hurting people with objects, and then now he has this pair of nunchucks.
Yeah. Your son, like has a history of violence and disturbing behavior.
Yeah.
This was like a child he bribed with candy.
None of, like I said earlier, none of his teachers were surprised. There was this one male teacher who they interviewed, and he was like, I just never felt comfortable around Brian. He's like, never.
Mm-mm.
He said, I never took my eyes off of him in class. He's like, I just never felt comfortable with him.
No, all of his friends, even his friends, his closest friends, like after talking in interviews, they were like, we were almost not so much surprised that he killed someone, but surprised that he only killed one person.
Right.
Surprised that he didn't shoot up a school or a store, or that he hadn't already killed like multiple people. Like, you need to address this. Like, this kid needs help.
Our society, though, to be fair, has never been so jaded, Andy. We have never been so calloused to horrible news than we are now.
Oh, yeah.
As a society. And so everyone almost has a friend that reminds them of Brian. But guess what? They ain't a fucking killer. At least not yet.
I feel like it's, I was just thinking about that with the desensitization of like violence and shocking things. It's like, it's a weird turn of like humanity from like, think of like the Middle Ages and like Rome and Gladiator. It's like where violence was so common that was our entertainment, where people were not shocked by hangings and dismemberments and tortures.
Right.
Like those were public entertainment. And then humanity went back into a moral like point where there was like, we kind of got out of hand there for a while, didn't we? We were kind of living like animals. And
maybe we'll just invent the NFL.
We'll make this more controlled, and we'll put pads on them. And then all of a sudden the internet was like, we can show you the old shit. And they were like,
yeah,
You
got the old shit?
I heard that old shit was nice.
And, you know, Brian chose to learn about awful things, and that's what he filled his brain with all the time, dude. Like, he basically studied this shit. You could tell that the kid aspired to be a serial killer. Like, it's so disheartening. In one quote in the interrogation, he said, police, they don't seem to care as much about high-risk individuals, homeless people, prostitutes, etc. So I was deliberately looking for someone who lived that type of life, end quote. But then he would go on to say why he found that information out.
Well, you also forgot I mean, no offense. But
oh yeah, no offense,
you forgot the absolute snarkiness of this douchebag, where he literally, he's talking to the police like he's teaching them things.
Yeah, obviously he was wrong in thinking that Barnes wouldn't go unnoticed. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reported that Barnes was known in the city for his outgoing personality and his love of reading. Some businesses, including Lenotti's, would put out a chair for him so he could sit and read. That was a bridal shower place, I believe. Barnes was so revered in Grand Junction, people referred to him as the reading man. They were so used to seeing him just sitting around in different areas reading.
Yeah. I'm surprised there's not like a cool like statue of him. Like, there is a cool little memorial of him, but I'm just kind of like, this guy seems like you get like a bronze statue of like an old man just reading a book in like the park or something like that. That's one of those, like, you know, like those little like park statues on a bench.
Yeah.
Like, that's what this guy deserves.
He got one.
I know he has. Did he actually get a statue of him?
Oh, a statue of him.
Yeah, that's
no,
what I'm saying. Like, he needed a statue of him just sitting there reading on his chair.
He got him a memorial.
He got a really pretty memorial. This guy deserves one of those like bronze, like just statues in the chair or something like that. I think his likeness.
I think being good person is not enough to get a statue. I think you also have to be rich.
You
got to be both. You got to be good and rich.
Probably.
It's kind of an oxymoron.
You have to like fund the statue, pay for it and stuff.
Exactly. You got to like put it in your will and shit, but also leave a fund to pay for it. But as I referred to, in November of 2021, a memorial to Barnes was unveiled in downtown Grand Junction, an iron and wood installation crafted by artist Tim Navin, who himself was once homeless. The memorial features a chair sitting under a tree with books lying on the seat. So, I mean, it is pretty nice. It's pretty
beautiful.
Amazing.
It's a beautiful memorial.
It really is. Now, as things are being laid to rest and people are healing for Barnes, the trial of Brian is beginning in January of 2023. Now, almost a year, well, a little over a year later, where Kohi would plead not guilty by insanity. It's like, dude, you done ruined all of your defenses in the interrogation.
That's one of the things the documentary, like every single thing he says, the documentary carefully points out. It's like, and this is where he ruins the chance at this defense. And this is where he ruins the chance at this defense.
Yep.
And like every single possible defense he has, they just pointed out. They're like, and you said this, that ruins that.
Yep.
And
the prosecution, they argued that during the interrogations, Kohean confessed to the murders. And state psychologists determined that he was not insane when the crime was committed. But defense attorneys said that Kohi's mental health disorders, such as major depressive disorder and autism, were triggered upon seeing Barnes, and that he was insane during the murder. Okay, just temporarily insane. It's that old case, Andy.
Just for a few brief minutes, temporarily insane.
Just temporarily. And the trial would last 12 days. I think mainly just because there is so much evidence.
Oh
my God. It's like, you want to make sure you get this kid, right? Like, you don't want to be like, eh, we got enough. He's dead in the water with this. No, you want to make sure he's nailed. So the trial did last 12 days. And after a two-day jury deliberation, they found Brian guilty of first-degree murder, tampering with a deceased human body, and tampering with evidence. Now, it was easy to get first-degree murder. I mean, because think about all the shit he revealed about planning. Like, he put on the gloves, he put on the mask, he took the knife, he turned around after he saw him. Like,
yeah, the thought he had done this. It's like, just, oh, that's another thing that is revealed. All those times that he went out to clear his head to go sit and park, he reveals that he's actually driving the streets at night looking for a person to target.
That's right. That's
right. Part of the things that comes out in the confessions, too.
And his parents caught him with that kill kit.
Yes.
Don't forget about the kill kit.
Yeah. His parents get you start getting real aggravated with this kid's parents. They literally found a pre-made kill kit with gloves, duct tape, like a knife, like a mask, like basically
like a mallet.
Yeah, like a hammer. It was like Ted Bundy's premature, like, you know, pre-built kill kit.
Yep.
And his parents found it, knew what it was, and were like, you need to either throw this away or we're gonna call the cops and you're gonna get arrested for conspiracy.
Yeah.
And he threw it away. I'm like, you probably, hear me out, should have still made a phone call.
Yeah.
To somebody.
To a therapist, somebody, man. But, man, you know, it's the parental curse, man. It's hard to see bad things in your children.
Oh, absolutely.
It's damn, dare I say, impossible.
Sometimes, yeah. It's hard
like,
to hear
to
that.
To this extent. I'm not talking about, like, you know, they're messy or they get smart mouth or whatever. I'm talking about to think that your child is a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Without concrete evidence.
Oh my God, yeah.
Remember would never believe it.
Remember the Jeffrey Dahmer thing on Netflix when it's like mostly showing his dad being in the interview or being in the interrogations and stuff and how his dad had to like talk about this and stuff. Like, we listen to this kid's mom on the 911 call.
Yeah.
It's haunting.
It's heartbreaking, like, man.
She does not want to acknowledge that this is what she found, but it's what she found. She has to go out in the backyard to try and hide from her son.
Yeah.
Because she's so scared. It's heartbreaking to hear her after that.
It really is. So let's wrap up what happened with Brian here, and we could talk a little more about it. But he would be incarcerated at the Buena Vista Correctional Complex, and he was sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. Very, very thick contrast to the 15 years he thought he'd get, Andy.
The confident. 19.
He said, I'll probably get like 15 years, right?
15, maybe 20. Like, he's so confident when he's confessing. He's like, yeah, I'll just tell you everything because, like, I'll probably get like, what, like 15, maybe 20 years? Like, I can't escape the long arm of the law. So, like, no slip anything past you guys. I only get like 15, 20 years, you know? I should be fine, right?
Right. Not if you keep confessing every fucking
thing.
Dude,
you are fucking digging so deep. So deep. You have fucking blisters on them hands, bro.
And I mean, I don't know what to blame in this case, Andy. There's people pointing fingers all over the place. You go on Reddit, it's like a lot of people blame the parents. They really do. But honestly, an adult person is responsible for their own actions. And if he is sane enough to have a driver's license, he's attending college, you know, he's working on his own. Nah, he's completely sane. His actions are his own.
But still, like, there were warning signs at home. there were things at home, that kill kid at home, his morbid curiosity, the things he would even say to his parents, to where his parents are in the interviews later on talking like, Brian, that's not funny. You shouldn't say that. And he's like, well, it's funny to me. You don't get my humor.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, Brian, that's not funny. Like,
but I mean, how many parents have heard that from their kids? There's people listening right now going, oh my God, my son tells me that all the time. Or my daughter says that all the time. Like, so,
but when it's becoming like such, even the teachers are reiterating to the parents that like he's saying really dark and morbid and death and brutal things in school, and we're like, it's making children not feel safe.
Speaking of saying things, one thing I want to talk about before we end this is when he was stabbing him, and you touched on it a little bit earlier, and he was muttering like stinky, stinky boy, or die stinky, or something like that, right? Well, Stinky Boy is his Reddit screen name.
Mm-hmm.
It's been taken down, but there's people on Reddit who have screenshotted it before it was taken down. You can take a look at it. And I just wonder what that's about. I wonder like how that, did somebody somewhere when he was young, like did he have like this traumatic moment where somebody said he stunk and it like really embarrassed him? Or, you know, maybe really it was a sexual encounter that went south because of the way he smelled,
maybe,
or something like that. It's just so weird to be saying something so specific.
It's like almost like he was talking to a part of his personality, like a part of himself. Because he openly talks about that, how they're like, I have schizo something. He goes in this explanation,
but he also says he doesn't hear any voices.
Because then the doctors or the cops start saying like, well, do you have like another personality? Do you hear voices? Is somebody else there? And he's like, well, no, that's dissociative personality. He's like, I don't have two personalities.
Exactly.
Because like, he goes into like, what did you feel? It's like, well, I thought I was going to feel the best feeling ever, but I kind of just felt nothing. Like it's like excitement, but just like,
he's lying.
Just
dude.
Like human excitement.
I think he's lying.
I think he's kind of lying too.
He is lying there. That's his point, because he says that at the very near the very end of the interview, and I think that's his point where he's trying to say like, you know, if you let me out, I won't do it again.
Yeah,
you know, but, I'm like, go easy on me. I won't do it again.
But we've just watched you reenact this with gusto, my man. Like we've watched you reenact this like you were given a performance.
The jokes and the things that he laughed at just in the retelling. It's like, dude. No, you're a danger to society, bro. You're disconnected too much.
Yeah, because what happens if you get curious? You're gonna get curious. It's like, what if I just didn't do it right that time? Maybe that's if I do it this way, I'll get that feeling. You're not stopping.
Yep.
Whether it's this way or another way or with someone else, you're gonna do something worse.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you try Oh My Gaia, you won't try nothing else.
You won't try nothing. You won't need nothing else.
Nothing else, man.
You won't need nothing. You won't be no stinky boy.
You will not be a stinky boy.
You will not be no stinky
boy. And that is facts. Oh My Gaia is an innovative, all-natural deodorant, fragrance, and beard oil company specializing in paraben and aluminum-free products. Their innovative line of deodorants inhibit the growth of odor-causing bacteria while still maintaining effectiveness. And guys, Oh My Gaia has tons of scents to choose from. If you guys haven't heard me rattle them off, I think I will.
We got new ones, Michael.
We got new ones. Do you have them pulled up?
No, we got new scents, though. I was just thinking about that. We always just blaze through these, but there's even new ones now, Michael.
There is. Aloha is a new scent.
Which, we can thank
that's my wife's favorite scent.
I think we can thank Kristen for that personally.
Yes, absolutely. And we also have our very own scent. I like to think of it as an OG now. It's True Crime Pine. It's been around for a minute, but you really can't go wrong with True Crime Pine.
It's a flagship scent.
It really is. And because you guys are True Crime Guys listeners, you can use the word Creeper for 15% off your order. That's Creeper for 15% off your order at shop_OhMyGaia on Instagram or OhMyGaia.com. OhMyGaia.com. Don't forget to use that code word Creeper for 15% off. And let them know that True Crime Guys sent you. Please, guys, support the people that support us. Oh My Gaia has been with us since the beginning, and we could not be happier. I still wear Oh My Gaia every single day, and as does my entire family, actually.
It's a deliciously smelling house.
It is. It is. It
smells of rich mahogany and aloha.
Yeah, sure. That's what it smells like. But guys, please, if you love what we do here at True Crime Guys, don't forget to check out Patreon. Patreon.com/TrueCrimeGuys, where for just $2 a month, you can get access to all of our Patreon-exclusive episodes. I think there's 70 of those, and we do one a month, so you'll get access to all of our future ones as well. There are annual memberships on that $2 tier. It's only $21 for the whole year, so you can pay up front if you'd like to do that. Or if you want to bump up to the $5 tier, you guys can get access to everything that we have ever made. Hundreds of audio files from all of the various shows that I've got sidetracked with over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, guys, thank you for listening to this. Next week, are we going to be on Patreon? I think we are.
I think we are, Michael.
I think we're due.
There have been some headlines lately.
Yes. And speaking of, guys, we will be here with you on the free platform with headlines and shenanigans next week. And we'll have a regular episode on Patreon. It's an old doubleheader, Andy.
Oh, yeah.
Bring your coffee.
I will bring whatever we need to bring.
That's right. All right, guys. We also got music available on Spotify. Search True Crime Guys as an artist. Give us a follow at True Crime Guys on social media. And make sure you subscribe to that YouTube. And leave us a review on whatever podcast app you're listening to. All right? Thank you very much, guys. And until next time, keep on creeping.
Bye.